Welcome, Earth Protecting viewers. Today on Models of Success, we'll explore the life of the brilliant American pioneer, Mr. George Washington Carver, who brought about important agriculture innovations and benefited the individuals he came in contact with. We had the opportunity to learn more about Mr. George Washington Carver's journey to success with Dr. Gary Kremer, co-author of the biography entitled George Washington Carver, In His Own Words. Dr. Kremer is also the executive director of the State Historical Society of Missouri and director of the Western Historical Manuscript Collection.
George Washington Carver was born on a farm in Newton County in southwest Missouri, which was way down in the southwest part of the state where there weren't many African Americans.
When he was about 6 months old, he was unfortunately separated from his family. Later, he and his brother were raised by the kind-hearted Moses and Susan Carver, who were relatives of George's former neighbors.
He grew up on this farm, and he was a sickly child. He, as a consequence of that, did not work out in the field. He, in fact, learned to do a lot of household chores from Aunt Susan. Throughout his life, those skills that he learned would serve him well. He learned to sew, crochet, and do macrame, crook, and iron. He was an incredible conservationist. He refused to throw things away. So, for example, he would take the twine from packages that came through the post office and he would turn them into macrame. Mm-hmm.
His keenness for learning extended further into his education.
Carver seems to have been taught to read and write by his surrogate parents, but they quickly understood that this kid wanted more. There was a black school in Neosho, which was about 10 or 12 miles away. So he, probably 12 or 13 years old, when he walked from the farm in Diamond, Missouri into Neosho.
There, an African-American midwife and her husband took him under their wing, and young George was able to attend school while doing chores for his host.
But he quickly learned that he knew about as much as the school teacher did. And so again, Carver stayed there for an indeterminate amount of time until the late 1870s, when he seems to have hitched a ride with a group of Exodusters. The Exodusters were African Americans who were fleeing the South after the end of Reconstruction in 1878 and 79, and they were headed to Kansas. And eventually his wanderings took him to Winterset, Iowa, where he showed up one day in a Sunday church service and began singing with the choir. The woman who directed the choir was the wife of a prominent physician, and she was so impressed with his sincerity and his enthusiasm.
This kind lady, Mrs. Helen Mahalan, invited Mr. Carver to her home to join her and her husband, Dr. John Mahalan, for Sunday dinner. This couple would become two of Mr. George Washington Carver's closest acquaintances.
Dr. and Mrs. Mahalan quickly understood that there was something unique and distinctive about this young man. He apparently played a guitar, wrote poetry, and loved to paint. He was very fond of art. And so they encouraged him to go to school at Simpson College, and he was quite gifted. He displayed art in a state contest and mostly still lifes. He had a love of plants. He had a love of color and shadows and light. One of his teachers, he encouraged him to go to Iowa State University, or then Iowa State College in Ames, where her father was a teacher of botany. Carver did end up at Iowa State, where he seems to have found his niche.
Upon graduating, he was the first African-American to be offered a position as part of the school's faculty. He also continued his studies there until 1896, when he received his master's degree in agriculture.
By that time, Booker T. Washington, who had established Tuskegee Institute in Alabama during the previous decade, began to recruit Carver. He had heard about this man, who by that time was the only African-American in the country with a graduate degree in agriculture.
Mr. George Washington Carver did indeed move to Tuskegee Institute. There he worked with Mr. Franklin Sumner Earle, the chair of biology and horticulture in the Alabama Polytech Institute at Auburn, Alabama, to compile an initial list of Alabama's fungi. Throughout his career, Mr. Carver continued to pursue his interest in mycology, or the study of fungi, and discovered several new species. Two of these were later named after him. However, it was his innovations in agriculture that made George Washington Carver very well known. When we return, we will see why some say that Mr. Carver fundamentally changed the practice of farming in the southern USA. Please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television. Welcome back to Models of Success, as Dr. Gary Kremer, co-author of the biography entitled George Washington Carver, in his own words, tells us more on the extraordinary George Washington Carver.
I think George Washington Carver was ahead of his time in many ways, one of which was in his view that science and religion were simply different ways of searching for the truth. I think there is no way to understand George Washington Carver without understanding his deep spirituality. He grew up convinced that God spoke to him through dreams. He would take walks at 4 o'clock every morning, as he put it, to commune with God through nature. His letters are filled with references to the Bible, references to the power of God. He gave credit to God for all of his discoveries.
Mr. Carver used his God-given talents to assist others, particularly African-American farmers in the southern USA who led less fortunate lifestyles.
His position was that God had given man everything in nature he needed to be able to live wisely and economically and fruitfully. Carver taught farmers how to rejuvenate their soil by planting legumes, green gardening, we would call it today, by rotating their crops and plowing under things like alfalfa or the peanut, which was high in nutrients for the soil. Instead of using commercial fertilizers, he would encourage them to go down to the bog near Tuskegee and to shovel out compost. He was producing incredible results by nurturing the soil and telling farmers that they needed to focus more energy and attention on a smaller parcel of land. And this was very popular.
With abundant harvests like never before, Mr. George Washington Carver experimented on ways to use the surplus. With peanuts, he derived dairy-free alternatives and created 300 other products. He developed 118 byproducts of the sweet potato, including syrup and flour. Mr. Carver invented numerous things, such as paints, rubber, and medicine prototypes from other plants and made of clay. Such advancements further opened new businesses for the farmers, and George Washington Carver's name was becoming recognized.
Carver became a folk hero as a consequence of his testimony before the Congressional House Ways and Means Committee. He advocated the passage of the peanut tariff, and his demeanor and tone and expertise and language captivated this group of men. I think he was told he had 5 minutes to make your case, and the 5 minutes passed, and he was invited to speak for another five, and that kept going until finally the chairman said, "You can have all the time you want, brother." He not only won over this committee, but the reporting of this incident captivated the nation.
Mr. George Washington Carver's charm and intelligence sparked the interest of many people. These included the notable Mr. Henry Ford, head of Ford Motor Company, with whom Mr. Carver collaborated on several projects. There was also the great inventor, Mr. Thomas Edison, who offered Mr. Carver a job at the Edison Laboratories with a generous annual salary in Orange Grove, New Jersey. Visitor to Mr. Carver's home included U.S. President Theodore Roosevelt. In addition, Mr. Carver was approached by the Young Men's Christian Association, YMCA, and the Commission on Interracial Cooperation out of Atlanta, two groups trying to improve racial relations.
And they say to Carver, "Will you make a speaking tour through the South and speak to young white kids?" In the hope that his magnetic personality would have a positive effect on race relations. And it worked. And these kids would become enamored with him, and many of them would approach him afterwards and want to come and visit him.
Mr. George Washington Carver certainly offered his utmost care to the younger generation. Dr. Kremer recalls some touching testimonies to Mr. Carver's kind nature.
An elderly man who was nearly 90, he had encountered Dan Carver as a young white kid in Lynchburg, Virginia. 70 years later, I'm talking with this man, and I ask him, "What was it like?" And he wanted to read a poem to me because he said Carver would take these boys into his study and he would read poetry to them. The poem was really a sermon out of a book by a famous black poet and writer, James Weldon Johnson. The book was called God's Trombone. I tracked down a lot of these boys in the 1980s, and what they remembered about Carver was the personal interest he showed in them, the nurture.
Mr. Carver won a wide array of accolades, including the 1923 Springarn Medal from the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People and the 1939 Theodore Roosevelt Medal for his distinguished contributions to agriculture in southern USA. He was named Man of the Year in 1940 by the International Federation of Architects, Engineers, Chemists, and Technicians. And in 1990, he was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame. The George Washington Carver National Monument was established at his birthplace. Two ships were named in his honor, the Liberty Ship SS George Washington Carver and the submarine USS George Washington Carver, SSBN 656, and two stamps and a coin honored him. Indeed, Besides his brilliant inventions, Mr. George Washington Carver's concern and care for his fellow citizens will long be remembered.
He became convinced that by massaging peanut oil into the muscles in a certain way, he could cure withered limbs. There are a lot of letters written as testimonials by young people who believed that Carver helped them. And Carver, in the mid-1930s, is getting thousands of letters and requests to come and visit him so that he could perform massages. And you read these letters and you wonder, how in the world did this man find time to do all of this? But he worked constantly. He was deeply moved by human suffering, and he tried to address it and to assist it. There are lots of Carver quotes, but at one point he wrote a letter in which he said something to the effect that no one has the right to come into this world and leave it without making it a better place to live. And he certainly did his part to try to make the world a better place to live.
Perhaps Mr. George Washington Carver's endearing life and profound sense of spirituality may be reflected in one of his quotes. Our Creator is the same and never changes, despite the names given him by people here and in all parts of the world. Even if we gave him no name at all, he would still be there within us, waiting to give us good on this earth. We thank Dr. Gary Kremer for your precious time and your knowledge to share the brilliant life of Mr. George Washington Carver with our global audience. May God bless you as you continue to brighten the world by giving insights to the lessons of the past. It was a joy having you with us on today's Models of Success. Please keep your dial tuned to Supreme Master Television for Vegetarianism, the Noble Way of Living. Coming up after Noteworthy News. We'll see you next time. George Washington Carver, in his own words, by Dr. Gary Kremer, and George Washington Carver is available at www.amazon.com.
For more details, please visit www.suprememastertv.com/MOS.